Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Spoke to him.
Well, we have to go to Matul. We're trying to locate Anne's father. She hasn't heard from him for some time.
That's not a cool place to hit. Natives claim it's cursed. They report it like the plague.
I'm going to tell everyone that you're the one who's crazy. Demented, cruel, evil son.
What exactly did my father die of, Dr. Minor? And the boat's crew, what happened to them?
What's this about the dead coming back to life again and having to be killed a second time?
These islands, fantastic legends, voodooism, zombies, been rife for centuries.
Voodoo's just superstitious horseshit.
Well, whatever it is, it makes the dead stand up and walk. I've seen it with my own eyes.
Said, when the earth spit out the dead, they will come back to suck the blood from the living.
I'm so scared. We're not going to make it off this island.
Dead stand up and walk.
So we thought of all just goofy sci-fi action or horror franchises we could take on, let's take on Zombie. For those who probably already know but don't necessarily remember, so George Romero's cult classic Dawn of the Dead was released overseas, especially in Italy, mm-hmm. as Zombie. And so, since people forget, in the 70s and 80s, knockoff movies were even more popular than they are now, before they got regulated to just made for TV and direct to video. Just the drive-in theaters ate them up, no pun intended. And
oh yeah. Yeah. And a thing to think about too, if Dawn of the Dead didn't exist, think of how detrimental that would be to the Italian film industry in the late 70s, early 80s. It's like,
they would have demolished it. Yeah. They would have done a few more spaghetti westerns, violent cop movies with Franco Nero, and maybe some Star Wars.
Thank God for Mad Max.
Yeah, there you go. Mad Max and hardcore porn. Yeah. They're pretty much just flourished in the whole Hercules movies. Yeah, this is like, you know, what would the Italy industry be like now, let alone European film in general?
When
did you discover these? I always heard about them, but it took me a while to realize some actually regarded Zombie 2 as a pretty solid standalone movie, despite being, because like giallo films, some
marketed
were actually
as a sequel.
Some cult film reviewers were just kind of reanalyzing them and just saying, you know, you should actually check this one out at least. And I was like, okay, wow. And if thankfully for you, you reminded me, oh, wow, there's actually a fifth one. I'm like, what? I missed that one.
Let's see. Well, gosh, where do we begin? We already touched on Dawn of the Dead, which for me is not just one of the greatest zombies movies ever made. It's one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
Yeah, it's a good actioner. It's a good horror movie. It's got so much. This is when this genre flourished, because you got so much social commentary. You got violent, you know, Serpico type cops, you know, basically targeting every minority. And you got the same kind of momentum of a closed in newsroom having to report this disaster as it's breaking out live on TV, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of it hits close to home these days. So yeah.
Oh, totally. And we could talk all day about it, because it's like, it's just so quotable. Mm-hmm. It's not a stupid movie like these films were often made out to be. And it's just so just profound at times. It's like, man, again, you could not make something like this today without it just feeling just so, just to a reminder of the times, or just, you know, uneven and just not as well structured. And so I guess we're going to just tackle Zombie 2, 3, 4, and 5, and see which of these actually is worthwhile, which of these are unintentionally amusing and trashy fun, and which of them just avoid.
Oh, and also too, it's not just, you know, America had a zombie series, but you also had Australia had its own zombie series. Germany, yeah. I got a little bit of tidbits on each of those, and then there were films that just randomly had zombies slapped on the title in some markets. So I did a little bit of homework, but yeah, this should be a lot of fun. We can go right into Lucio Fulci's Zombie Flesh Eaters, AKA Zombie, AKA Two. Zombie 2.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the most, this is the film that put Lucio Fulci on the map. This is just a fantastic, gory, it takes the zombie back to its roots. Was Jacques Tourneur, I Walk with a Zombie. It takes place in the Caribbean. Here are my three big selling points. You have a scene where a zombie fights a shark, which that alone should be enough to say, okay, I've got to see this movie. You've got the famous splinter scene where a splinter goes through the eye of Olya Carlatos, who plays Prince's mom in Purple Rain. A little bit of info there for you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the one of the great closing scenes, zombies walking across the Brooklyn Bridge. And the Fabio Frizzi score and the makeup effects. I mean, the fact that they use potter's clay for the makeup effects really gives these zombies a distinct look. So this is just a...
Yeah, they're molded out of dirt and everything. Yeah. You know, they came out of the ground and... I like how you touched on that, because I definitely, if you're going to watch any Italian movie, you're definitely, especially if it's a spaghetti western or giallo film, you're going to remember the score. And Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely remember the score from this one.
All right, okay, so, and then here's the thing. Okay, we're going to continue with the American series, but this is also the case for Britain, Thailand, and Italy. They all have this same lineup as far as the zombie franchise goes. There's Zombie 3, which came out in 1988. Lucio Fulci started directing it, and then either because he hated the movie he was working on or he got sick because of complications with diabetes, Bruno Mattei took over. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know who Bruno Mattei is, he's...
another thing coming.
Yes, yes.
For those that don't know, he is probably, you probably know him from doing Jaws 5, which was just not only a shark movie illegally using stock footage from the first free Jaws movie, but also had nothing at all to do with it, and was just he was just who the Italians always called it. He was basically their Jim Wynorski, Fred Olen Ray. You know,
yes, yeah.
That's if a good comparison. Couldn't get Roger Corman or any of these other just silly drive-in Shameless, you know, knockoff factories to do it, you know, you were going to hire someone else who just basically was doing all these other, just again, just softcore zombie action stock footage ridden movies to just come in and do it cheap. And Mattei is just not only infamous but just notable for just denying having to do with half the stuff he's claimed to have done. And so it's just like, do you just not want recognition for anything? Are you getting dementia? Do you have Alzheimer's? What's going on in that noggin of yours, dude?
Although I gotta say, I find his films infinitely entertaining. Like the stuff he did with Red Brown, whether it's a Robo War or Strike Commando, I could watch those movies all day. It's
Those movies were great because he was bursting onto the just do a knockoff of Platoon or Rambo scene and then mix them in with just a crappy monster that's supposed to resemble a mix between RoboCop and the Predator. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was like that was their whole market. People laugh at it now, but it's like, now that's even gold. Now if you do a deliberately cheesy movie, that's kind of become the thing with the Asylum doing all these mockbusters and other deliberately awful movies. So it's just like, it is just so wild how these movies, like you say, they're just entertaining. It doesn't matter whether it's for the right or wrong reasons. You just guffaw how sometimes they even get even more creative to where you're like, did they take a deleted like script from one of these well-known Hollywood blockbusters? You know,
because
it's like they will steal sound effects and everything, and people wonder why they never found them. It's like, yeah, because of legal rights and they knew they would get sued. It's like a lot of this stuff was on bootleg or just at video stores. It's like you weren't going to find these on any of the movie channels late at night, even. It was not even that kind of accessibility. So it is really funny how they just keep getting rediscovered. And, you know, even years before everyone had a YouTube show and they were saying, look at what crazy, crappy movie I found at a thrift store. And so yeah, Zombie 2 seems to have some pretty good critical ratings, and like you say, it gets noted because there's, you know, a zombie attacks a shark. And but I will say, just going through it again, I didn't have a problem going through it. It pretty much set it all up there. And you know, again, you know, just how I like it is just have a very competent, moody, just kind of voyeuristic feeling of, I'm looking at this disaster that's progressing and all these decent actors playing the scientists. And then, yes, the second hour is just all the nonstop chaos. So it's like, you really can't go wrong. You can't go wrong.
Nah. And I had the pleasure of seeing it in a theater with a couple, with a packed audience. This is probably back in August, and it plays really well with a crowd. It is it's a great movie to show with a group.
Screening of like classic B movies.
It's part of a program called, well, I'm going to go ahead and plug a friend of mine, Peter Vulo, for this. He does Thursday Night Terrors, where every month he'll show like a classic horror movie on a Thursday, like once a month. He's shown Maniac. He's shown Reanimator. I'm actually checking out Doom Asylum for the first time, so I'll actually get to see that. We've seen Pieces, Demons, just like all some of the best 70s and 80s horror movies. And so yeah, I got to see it in like, I guess, a revival screening of sorts.
Oh, totally. And so let's see how much money it made in 80s, 70s dollars. So it made, well, shit. I got no budget.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I know for an American production they've got to have like all the paperwork and all the bookkeeping and stuff, but Italy, that it was just basically a devil may care attitude as far as filmmaking goes.
They filmed parts of it in Dominican Republic, Mexico, and New York, so yeah, there you go. But I do like how a lot of these films have been able to be laid out in even books going as far as like the mid-90s. It's like there's been some serious film trivia there.
Oh yeah, I think we talked about Zombie 2. Zombie 3, it's all right. I mean, it's there's some inconsistent,
but not as edgy as Part 2, like you say, because it's,
yeah,
it's basically is a continuation, and you still, like you say, you get that full C fill, but at the same time,
yeah,
it definitely felt like there were three different people in the kitchen.
Yeah, and something consistency with the zombies as well, because you have some that are slow, and then you have like the one they find at the gas station that's wielding a machete that's just like hopped up on methamphetamine and cocaine. So who knows?
Well, that's how the filmmakers were. So there you go.
Yeah,
that's as deep as it got. But yeah, no, that's so true. You don't know if originally it was supposed to start out, or if they were supposed to develop it as, hey, they're gonna slowly go from, you know, slow too fast zombies.
Yeah,
it's like, well, whatever happened. But
then let's see, 1989, we have Zombie 4 After Death. This was just not good, despite the fact that you had Claudio Fragasso, the director of Troll 2, in the director's chair for this one. So if you've seen Troll 2, you kind of know what you're getting into with this one. The best part has to be the theme song for After Death. Other than that, you can pretty much skip this film.
I had fun with this shit fest just because it was not only the first one I saw, but just the history of it was wild. The explosions were just like, I had to rewind one of them at one point when I was watching on YouTube. Like, what did I just watch? And yeah, no, don't get me wrong. It's not entertaining for the right reasons, but it's hysterical because this is like, again, anyone who knows about Troll 2 knows that the guy did not speak anything resembling English, and they just would always make the mistake of just getting someone who just wasn't familiar. And so yeah, it was a clusterfuck from day one. And but yeah, it's also known as Altered After Death. I don't know why the poster looks like something you'd see in something
John Carpenter's The Fog. That's exactly they actually stole like one of the publicity images from that movie for the poster of the hand going through the door. So yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
I was thinking The Thing, but yeah, it's definitely got The Fog. Like, man.
All right, then after that one we had Zombie 5, The Killing Birds. This one, I actually, a friend of mine lent me a copy of the Shriek Show DVD. If you can remember Shriek Show from like the early 2000s, they were kind of like the only competition Anchor Bay had before you had Vinegar Syndrome. Yeah. Jeez. Yep. They were like one of the ones that were really putting out like these obscure horror movies. let's see, Zombie 5, The Killing Birds, you have Robert Vaughn, who is the owner of this weird house out in the middle of nowhere in Louisiana.
After Man from U.N.C.L.E., it all went
down. Yeah, he's a far cry from the Magnificent Seven. Although there's a few highlights here, the house that Robert Vaughn's character stays in is actually the hotel from Lucio Fulci's The Beyond.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
So, Fulci had nothing to do with this, but yeah, they were using his same sets and style.
Yep. Ghost directed by Joe D'Amato, who is very infamous in his own rights. There's actually a few films in the zombie franchise that he directed.
And the Enzo G. Calistrati guy who did the Bronx Warriors, I would always get them and Fulci all mixed up. They literally all had the same thing. Do hardcore softporn, and then, you know, and then do a Conan the Barbarian knockoff, and then do a Mad Max Escape from New York knockoff, and then repeat. And then on the side, do some giallo mystery or whatever Argento inspired thing you can do. And then, yes, do a zombie film. And that's, you know, that way you can steal some of the Romero money. But it's so true. Like, this one is probably the biggest clusterfuck of them all because, yes, it feels not only nothing to do with zombie, but also like they just were taking just just all these other just haunted house kind of thrillers and using the same sets, probably even leftover footage. Now, I guess you saw the IMDb trivia that they believe, strongly believed, I guess by one of the film history books, that they strongly believe Jody Amato is actually the credited director. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's the cinematographer and the producer, mm-hmm. and I don't know if he denied it or not, but he probably doesn't care. Yeah. He was also probably high on coke and just...
Yeah. And this is the weird thing. This is the weird thing, too. Zombie 4 After Death came out in 1989. Zombie 5 The Killing Birds came out in 1987. So I think this was originally like just a regular Killer Birds movie that's ripping off Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. And then they decide later on to add zombie footage and then re-release it as Zombie 5 Killing Birds, which is not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know kind of what you're in for when you got a ripped off, you know, eyeball on the cover of this. I don't think that's even in the movie, is it?
No, there's nothing like that. Nah.
I saw it in one day and I remember nothing about it. So
nah.
Usually there's a shocking moment we remember, you know?
Yeah. The only thing I remember from watching this since the bonus extra is the shriek. They did an interview with Robert Vaughn on for the DVD.
Oh, and nice.
It's a 12-minute interview. He probably only talks about Zombie 5 for less than a minute. Like, he does not even want to talk about the movie the interview's featured on, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting. So, Shriek Factory. So you probably got that DVD around 2003, 2007.
I was able to buy it off secondhand like earlier this year. So I probably paid $15 out of pocket for it. So, and normally those run like $25, $30 because they're so rare in there. I think most of them are out of print. So.
Oh, you're talking about. So it's Shriek Factory. So Shriek Show.
Yeah, they were related to Media Blasters, who was primarily anime.
Oh, okay. Shit. Do they do Blu-rays now?
Gosh, I don't even know if they're still around. I don't know if they just kind of because you had so many other companies now cropping up, whether it's Shameless, Vinegar Syndrome, Arrow. Those guys may have taken the wind out of the. Shriek Show sales.
Yeah. Is that how much you want for that print? It'll cost mm-hmm. you an arm and a leg.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I don't know if these are the ones you might have heard of. There's actually a Zombie 6 Monster Hunter, aka Absurd. This was a Jody Amato film.
I did not know about this.
Yep. Wow. Even though there are no zombies in this movie, so
that's why I don't
go figure. This is actually, I would say, an Italian movie that's trying to imitate American slashers. You have George Eastman, who from Anthropophagus. Yep. He's not so much a zombie as he is a lab experiment that has rapid healing abilities. So imagine a cross between Michael Myers and Wolverine from the X-Men, and that's basically what you're getting.
That's why I always thought he was just so funny. You'd see him half naked making out with all these gals way younger than him, and he just always looks like some pre-Hugh Jackman, post-Stallone
mm-hmm.
his prime look.
More Frank Stallone than Sylvester Stallone, to be honest.
Oh, dear. Does he still have his long hair in this, or is he
Nope, he's got short hair. He's got shorter hair. And then we have Zombie 7, which is actually just Anthropophagus from 1980. This is pretty common where, Italian distributors or even just distributors in general will just take an old movie and then repackage it as a sequel to a successful movie that came out. Like, for example, Mario Bava's Bay of Blood was sold in some markets as a sequel to Last House on the Left, despite coming out before Last House on the Left.
Wow. So there you go, doing the Roger Corman factory trope of beat a movie to theaters before it comes out, like with Carnosaur coming out a few
months. Oh, yeah. Yes. Perfect example.
And both getting good reviews from Roger Ebert. So that's a
And if you haven't seen Anthropophagus, it is basically famous for just one sequence, and it's one of the most infamous sequences in horror film history. You have a cannibal that rips out the fetus from a pregnant woman's womb. And that's pretty much all this movie's known for.
You know what you're in for.
Mm-hmm. And I read that up and it's like, actually it was just a rabbit they bought at a butcher shop. So it's kind of interesting just to see how they do this horrible stuff and how they pull it off is always interesting to me.
Oh, totally. I mean, and people, they do really good makeup effects in all these good or shitty movies. Just it's like you have to realize, like, they couldn't even afford even a Hollywood type to just come overseas and help them out, like Stan Winston.
Yeah,
Baker, you know.
Nah,
and I'm sure Stan Winston would not, even before, probably wouldn't have bought it unless it was an undertaking like, you know, Predator, where very organized. It's kind of, you know, he's just starting his career, so yeah, he'll say yes. But yeah, I mean, they weren't even going to get Nicotero or Robert Kurtzman or any of those guys when they were beginning, just because this is like, they already, I guarantee you, everyone heard behind the scenes stories, and the only people who bothered with stuff like that was, you know, TV big name actors.
Maybe you could get Dick Smith if you offer him enough money, but no one else is probably going to take on the project. Okay. We can go. Let's see. Next I've got here on my list is actually there was the zombie series for Germany, which is actually just Romero's Dead trilogy. You have Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, and then Zombie 3 from 1988. So that one's actually pretty close to keeping things in actually like the same continuity, which is actually pretty impressive.
I was really surprised. Because, I mean, like you say, I mean, to actually just kind of put some sort of care when it's already a knockoff of a knockoff, you know, they did pretty good.
And I love Day of the Dead. I think I'm glad now that people are finally turning around on it and realizing just how good of a movie it is itself, and not trying to compare it to Dawn of the Dead, which hurt it a lot. It
doesn't have to be better than Dawn. No. That's the other thing too. And that's what I've even said about Land or Survival, is like, you can keep Diary of the Dead, because that just doesn't feel, I don't like Romero, but
yeah, that was too gimmicky. Like, that was just too much of the found footage type stuff, and I'm very rarely am I a fan of the found footage.
Yeah, I other than Hell House LLC, it just seemed like, and Record, which I think is pretty Romero, at least the first one is.
I would also add Troll Hunter. That's probably my favorite of the found footage films.
So there you go. Yeah, it's like, after a while, everyone was just putting the Blair Witch thing into just to where it didn't mean anything anymore. It's like, can you keep your camera just steady? And it's like, we're already having this argument with how everyone's trying to look like Bourne Identity or Taken, and it's just like, or Expendables, and it's like, half the time they don't even make use of their gimmick, which is you're going to have a 50, 60-year-old ass kicker, you know, past his prime, you know, to get his daughter back. And like you say, is like, a gimmick is only good for so long. Now everything has to be in a nightclub like John Wick, or some unusual vigilante with a special ops background like the Equalizer. And it's like, but still, is the content there, or is it just going to wear you out?
I do have one film that was released in Australia as part of the zombie franchise that I want to call attention to. 1981's Dawn of the Mummy. This is what happens when the the zombie genre is so oversaturated that you realize, okay, we can't do zombies anymore. What's another monster that we can do that's just like zombies but not zombies? Why not? Let's throw mummies in. Let's just use mummies for the zombie instead of zombies. And although I will say the Egyptian locations are beautiful, the music by Shuki Levy, who did probably every cartoon of the 80s and 90s. He did the X-Men cartoon, Inspector Gadget.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yep. So I've heard about this one and been wanting to see it for a while, but yeah, it's just so wacky how they took zombie tropes and added it to a mummy film, because they're similar, but again, mummies are very, very slow. So just very interesting how mummies have especially, you know, just evolved throughout time, you know, and been a mixture of evil genies and, you know, years before Wishmaster and New Mummy, you know, it was always interesting just seeing just kind of how Lovecraftian they could even be, even though those are two totally different subgenres. So I'm surprised that one, since it's been kind of getting rediscovered, did not get a sequel or two, because it seemed like it had some kind of gimmick and I'm sure made decent video rental money.
Oh yeah, and it ends on a sequel, so you know they have left the door open. So I wouldn't mind, you know, someone trying to reach Harmony Gold and telling them, hey, I got an idea for a Dawn of the Mummy sequel, and they're like, okay, sure, here's $10,000. That's all we can spare.
And unfortunately, I don't know if anyone even wants to go the extra mile, because nowadays they're not even casting people who are Egyptian to sell the movie, or just having it make any kind of coherent sense other than just loosely being inspired by Universal Terror. Mm-hmm. And so it just seems like it's just kind of a lost cause. Mm-hmm. It's like when you're trying to tell someone to make a mummy movie, it has to be pretty much you'd have to make it for TV, or you'd have to tell them, yeah, I'm making an Indiana Jones type movie, and then don't, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
More of an Alien in Egypt kind of movie.
All right, and then here, just for the last bit, I have just a couple of a list of random movies that producers just slapped the zombie title on. Just let me know if these are any ones that you might have heard of. There's Let Sleeping Corpses Lie, aka Living Dead at Manchester Morgue.
I've definitely heard of that, but I did not know they put a zombie title on that one. So
yep, this I got a list here of I think at least six movies. Four of them are called Zombie 3 in other markets.
Oh my god. So, the bastardization continues. This is what trouble I even had when I was doing the Hong Kong In the Line of Duty series, because there were so many of those which were just generic cops and robbers movies with kung fu, and it had nothing to do with the original Michelle Yeoh movie or any just of the first four movies. So it was like, yeah, after part five, you can kiss them all goodbye. They're just lame.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I got Zombie Holocaust, aka Dr. Butcher MD.
This one I do definitely dig.
Yes. A nice mix of the cannibal and zombie film. They decided to take those two genres and just mesh them together, which was actually pretty decent.
Nice.
Yep. Okay, here's a big one. Nightmare City, aka City of the Walking Dead, directed by Umberto Lenzi. This for me is, I think, pretty important because this is the film that actually introduced fast running zombies. It wasn't 28 Days Later.
City of the Walking Dead, yes.
Yep.
Meaning to see that, and that's part of his trilogy. Yeah, and definitely Romero inspired.
Yeah, although the zombies are not Romero-esque at all. They're actually more like vampires. Yeah.
No. And that's what's interesting too, is like, and one of them was known also as Virus, and everyone is virtually just looks like an Escape from New York Mad Max person. So they might as well have just been walking off the other, you know, Italian cash-in movie. And it is interesting how they're going to keep finding an audience since Arrow Blu-ray company.
Yeah. And I remember being in a Hollywood Video and seeing the box art for City of the Walking Dead. And I see they have two of the zombies from on City of the Walking Dead and Nightmare City in the box cover, and all the rest of the imagery is from RoboCop 3. So it's like they didn't even have enough confidence in their original movie. They're like, okay, let's just slap this stuff in here that has nothing to do with our movie.
Totally.
Okay, and then yeah, two more I've got here. Hell of the Living Dead, Bruno Mattei, co-written by Claudio Fragasso. This is just like a Mad Magazine mix of Dawn of the Dead and Apocalypse Now, and I absolutely enjoyed it. You cannot take this movie seriously.
No.
And if you're a fan of Goblin, like I am, they steal the music from Dawn of the Dead, Alien Contamination, and Beyond the Darkness. So it's Goblin. It's probably some of Goblin's best music put to a pretty outrageous film. And lastly, I have Burial Ground, Nights of Terror. If you've never seen Burial Ground Nights of Terror, trust me, the zombies are not the scariest thing about this movie. It is actor Peter Bark, who is clearly a dwarf, but he's supposed to be playing a young child. And there is just some, it's a zombie movie with an Oedipal complex. That's all I'm going to say about that.
And I think this one is interesting because I think it's kind of just becoming another just underground kind of movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The box art says that it's going to be like the next Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm not going to say that far, but I think when people discover it, they're going to
the room already took its place.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, besides the creepy Peter Bark, the zombie makeup is actually pretty cool. And if you love your Italian gore, this will definitely satisfy your appetite.
Totally. And you know, and let's be honest, guys, you're gonna have to lay down over $80 for these total, because they're gonna keep appearing and disappearing off of streaming sites. Yeah, Tubi might be your best option.
Tubi, and actually some of these are actually like the copyright wasn't renewed or something like that, or
either
distribution issues. You can actually find a lot of these on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube is a good bet, unfortunately. Like you say, yeah, is like there's definitely a lot of people who you know, will keep just rediscovering these films and just making them available on a Mill Creek pack. But yeah, they're kind of lost movies. Yeah,
and I'm sure these are just the ones we know about. I'm sure there are plenty of other movies that had zombies slapped on their title and other distribution markets that we don't even know about. So just who knows how many movies there actually are that were artificially added to this quote-unquote franchise.
Yeah, and you know, again, you know, anyone, do not take it seriously. It's not going to have anything to do with the other. It's just a completist. And again, you know, there's something about, again, these movies made back then versus now, you know, when it was knockoff, you would get some occasionally entertaining movies and that would soon become bigger cult movies than they ever had any right to be. And there's others that, again, it's like, you can hate it, but you can also laugh. So it's like, yeah, it's, and just have a blast with these and just take them for what they are. Just unusual, occasional misfires. And, but yeah, I see that Lindsay's, other two zombie films are definitely held in higher regard. And yet, for whatever reason, City of the Living Dead seems to be kind of just the better known one. I don't know if it's just, it just rolls off the tongue easier. I don't know why, but it's so funny how that's.
I know City of the Living Dead was Fulci. I know City of the Walking Dead was Lindsay. I'm trying to think. I know, yeah. And Lindsay was also steeped into the Demons trilogy too, which sometimes had the zombie name slapped on it. So that's weird.
Yeah, and for Demons, they sure come off as zombies. So
yeah,
especially when you get to the church, which has nothing to do with it, but it's just a rejected, you know, Demons free script that Argento produced, and that was actually the first one I saw and probably the best reviewed one easily.
Although I think Keith Emerson did the music for The Church, so that at least is worth checking out for, just for Keith Emerson doing a music score.
It's also probably the shortest of them. I saw it in Turner Classic Movies, so that tells you something.
Wow.
They do a Friday night cult thing, so.
Really? Turner Classic Movies actually showed that. Okay, that's pretty interesting.
One night at 2 in the morning, I was like, oh, wow, that's something. Yeah, it had a good score, had good effects, and it had a lot of unusual suspense, even though it wasn't really all that scary, but had a good cast too. I was like, oh my god, I've seen all these British and foreign actors and other stuff.
Nice. All right, I'll get The Church a look then.
I even recommend The Sect, which is often lampooned as a Rosemary's Baby knockoff, but it really has very little to do with that whole so-called gimmick, but it was originally called Demons 4. But yeah, we didn't even do a review of the Demons films. So thank you ever so much for being on here, Mac.
Thanks for the invite.
Anytime. So how do you handle your Spotify show, Mac at the Movies?
Mac of the Movies, where I look at everything from Art House to Grindhouse. I just recently finished my look at the Halloween franchise, minus Rob Zombie films. Rob Zombie, I'm saving for a remakes episode, but no, I cover everything from Halloween to Halloween Kills. I've also looked at the Friday the 13th films, Nightmare on Elm Street. I did an episode dedicated to the police films of Enzo G. Castellari, I've covered a whole bunch of Grindhouse box sets. So if you want to.
Yeah, that's a good head start, because they won't have all movies that are related to one another. You're going to have to, you know, do some VHS or go to a, you know, site that has a rare master that's, you know, ripped a VHS onto a DVD, you know, or a custom made Blu-ray, just to track these down.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, I've got basically all different stuff. I've covered the Zucker Brothers and Jim Abrams, their spoof films. So there'll at least be a couple of things on there that might pique your interest.
Oh, totally. And good on you to just even find just films that have a lasting impression and you're going to want to see multiple times to get a different interpretation of. You're welcome back anytime. We'll always just just hit me up for some other just unusual saga that we can probably track down or we've seen and we'll have time to rewatch.
We'll do. Definitely.
All right. Well, peace and love, everyone.
All right. Good night.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you should be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How did
be a
you
rough
watch
one.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey
and I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's late, it's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Bana 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 bana.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. Where the one last plot holes are gratuitous movies. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith, Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Semenov, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author Wendy Heller and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, the life of Lydia Semenov, daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Redd. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Semenov.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well, then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VD Clinic Pod. Or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
Hi there. It's Heather from the Watching Netflix Without You podcast. Did you know that there are over 1,200 Netflix original feature films and documentaries? And that number is only growing. So I've made it my mission to watch as many as I possibly can. Then, with a delightful guest or guests, disclaimer, more often than not my brother Ryan, we spend an episode rating, reviewing, and discussing a film at length. The first half of every episode is spoiler-free for those who haven't seen it yet. And in the second half, after a very clear spoiler warning, we dive into it. And that's really about it. You can listen to Watching Netflix Without You on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening.
It's a Jacked Up Review Show.